your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meet and merry part, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about, to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody and welcome to the show. Tonight we're going to be talking about magical incense with my guest, Sarah Mastros. Now, she holds a master's degree in theoretical mathematics. See, that was my worst subject, so I can't get the word ever out. And was a high school and college teacher for more than a decade before quitting to practice witchcraft full-time. She's the co-owner of Mastros and Zealot for many years, where she offers custom sorcery, courses on practical magic, and also where she's selling magical incense. And that's what we're headed for this evening. It's all about her book, The Big Book of Magical Incense. As usual, questions and comments from the chat room are always welcome, but you've got to be here to participate. So if you're not and you're listening live, come over to Para-X Radio Network and join us. And that being said, Sarah, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'd like to have stuff about incense and all kinds of stuff. I really liked your book, by the way.
I'm good.
You know, people will say she says that all the time, but for those who listen all the time, sometimes they don't. So just know that. just kind of feel back to that day that what she never said that time. Yeah. So that happens.
So I feel very honored. Thank you.
Well, it was a good book. And in our chat room, Tim Shaw is in there and he just typed in the chat room. He says, I use that book with like 10 exclamation points.
Oh, hooray. I'm glad you get use out of it.
He said
like,
it's great.
Using is really what I want people to do with this book. Like, it's my hope that in like 6 years, people will send me photos of these books and they'll just be completely destroyed. Like, notes on every page and like yep. Big oil spills all over them. And that's how I know. That's what I'm.
Dog-eared pages. Yes.
Exactly.
That's good. Well, you know, let's kind of get to the nitty gritty sure. Because this hour is going to go like. And we have so much to talk about that I'm not going to get to, and then I'm going to be kicking myself at the end. Anyway, someone saw a banner for this week's show and sent me over a question for you, and it's a great one to get things started. He wanted to know, what's the difference between magical incense and the regular incense we use with our spell work?
Oh, I mean, if you're doing spell work with it, then I consider it to be magical incense. So in the book, I sort of talk about different uses for incense, right? And the first one is that it, like, makes things smell pretty. And I don't want to discount that as, like, there is a role for that in magic where sometimes all the incense is doing is just kind of setting the mood. But then in mm-hmm. other times, we're using it, like, sort of as an offering. So almost as, like, a magical currency. Right. And then at other times, sort of the incense itself is what I think of as like it's a spell in and of itself. Right. Like mm-hmm. the incense is really carrying the magical load. Right. So the book kind mm-hmm. of covers a lot of different use cases for magical incense.
OK, well, Tim just said that his book has pizza stains and pizza sauce stains. So,
right.
Yeah, he loves pizza. So this
I mean,
a compliment.
Who doesn't love pizza? Like. Yeah.
Well, there are.
I believe books want to be read. You know,
yes, like, they do.
I don't need them to be like pretty and sitting on a shelf and like I want them to get dirty and get used and like just soak all the information out of them. That's my point.
Exactly. Okay. Okay, so the next logical question is, what got you interested in magical incense in general and then deciding to make it and share it?
Well, I always found incense appealing, right? Mm-hmm. But I have some sensory issues that, like, there are certain smells and sounds and whatever that I just sort of have trouble with. Like, mm-hmm. I guess I'm just really picky. So, for example, like the stick incense, the manufactured stick incense, mm-hmm. there's something in those sticks that I just, like, I don't, there's something in them that I can smell and maybe other people can't, I don't know, that I just found a little off-putting. So I just started making my own. And honestly, like, once I just, somehow I just had this revelation, like, oh, wait, you just put plants on charcoal and then there's incense? Like, it's such a like, dramatic kind of magical moment, right? When you sprinkle mm-hmm. it on the charcoal and, like, this big, like, whooshy cloud of smoke comes up. It really appealed to my sense of, like, ritual drama incense, right? It really just felt like a witchy thing to do. And so I started making it for myself. But, you know, when you're experimenting with recipes, sometimes, you know, oh, I accidentally put in a little bit too much of this. Oh, I better put in more of this. And then the next thing you know, you have, like, half a gallon of incense, right? So then I'd be desperately trying to give out incense to everybody I knew because I was never going to use this much incense. Right? Especially then, I wasn't as good at making it. So I didn't always, it wasn't always shelf stable when I first mm-hmm. started because I didn't really know what I was doing, right? So I started giving it out, and then I just sort of slowly started selling it. And, you know, I'm not really very good at marketing. So my marketing strategy for incense has always just been, you know, incense is kind of hard to market. It's just kind of like a bowl of leaves. Like, it's kind of hard to make it look pretty in a photo. And its essential characteristic, right? Smell is not a thing I can put in an ad. So I would just describe what was in them. And people would ask, like, oh, why did you use this ingredient? And then I would explain. And then I was like, oh, I should write a book about this. So then I did.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did. And Tim in the chat room was talking, he said, seriously, using herbs and mixtures on charcoal is crazy great and very effective for the purpose at hand. And as you were talking about it, I remember the first time I used charcoal. And it was like an epiphany.
Right? You know, it's so fun and like...
The smells, the smoke, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love the little, like, hiss and pop of like, the resin on the charcoal.
I like
the, like, phases of the smell. Like, it smells really different at the beginning, and then you can, like, smell the different incense at different, like, the different ingredients at different times. Mm-hmm. And especially during ritual, I really liked the ability to, like, just tailor it, right? So, like, every time I'd hit a barber's name in an evocation, I'd, like, throw an extra pinch, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'd start off with one incense and, like, phase into another one over the course of the ritual. I find it, like, just a sensually delightful thing to be engaged with.
You can get very flamboyant with it, but yes, it is very ritualistic.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
The other thing is, honestly, I'm not, like, clever-handed, right? Like, I'm not especially good. Like, I see a lot of people who have all these, like, craft skills. Like, they're, like, you know, my mother was a master embroiderer. My father was a carpenter. Like, I grew up with a lot of craft skill that I'm bad at. Like, my hands are not clever. But incense is really easy to make. Like, right? It didn't feel as, like... Some of the things I see people make in witchcraft, I'm like, oh gosh, I do not have the patience or the manual dexterity to make this amazing thing. But incense, like, the plants do all the work. You know, you mix stuff together and light it on fire. I think it was, like, the most essential kind of potion making. Like, I also make oils and things, but I feel like those are more technical. And incense is really just, like, the most sort of, like, intimate way to just interact with the plant.
Okay, so you're mind reading me because somebody in the chat just had a question asking if essential oils are considered to be incense.
I mean, I'm not that invested in making incense like a really technical word. Like, in a broad context, like, if you burn it for the purpose of making a nice smell, I would just call that an incense. personally, I don't normally use essential oils in incense, but I mean, it's partly just that I, you know, I have a lot of whole plant material sort of in stock, and mm-hmm. I don't always have essential oils in stock.
Right.
So because, you know, because like I said, I really like the sort of like sensual element of like the sound of them. And like, I really like to mm-hmm. keep them as whole, as close to the living like plant as I can get it is sort of the way I prefer to work with them. But yeah, you can definitely use essential oils more or less interchangeably with incense. So the recipes in the book, you could make them with oils, but you know, oils and whole plant materials, like their sort of relative strengths are different. So you'd have to like, mm-hmm. like the recipe wouldn't smell the same if you made it with oils. And so you might want to like play around with the recipes some as you converted them to oils. But mm-hmm. they're, I mean, they'd basically, like most of the recipes would work okay. with oils as well.
All right. You got another question. Question in the chat room. Do you ever mix essential oils with the herbs?
I don't usually. When I do, it's honestly, it's usually because like I have something in oil form that I don't have in plant form. Like I know, I think a lot of people have this idea that like you look at a recipe and like it requires these things and then you get those things and then you, but that's not really how I do it. I just kind of like open up my witch pantry and I think to myself, well, today I'm doing this kind of spell. And I just kind of like rummage around and see what I have mm-hmm. and kind of make something kind of on the fly, right? So like I never really wrote down recipes until I was giving them to other people. Like the only reason I was writing down recipes is because I felt like if I was selling people incense, I had to tell them what was in it.
Yeah,
but even still, like my Hecate incense, the recipe in the book is like the base of what I make, but every time I make it, it's different, mm-hmm. you know, depending on like what's in season and what I have in stock and just like, I don't know what the spirits like move me to put in at that particular time. So when I use essential oils and incense, it's usually just because I'm out of whole plant material. And like I said, I don't, for the most part, I just have more plants. Like I have more jars of leaves than I do jars of oil in my house. So I don't usually use essential oil. That's not like a judgment call when using them. I just don't. Also, they're quite expensive.
Yeah. Well, do you recommend growing your own herbs or just buying them from retailers?
Absolutely. Like when possible, I always encourage people to either grow their own or wildcraft. And like, those are the most important sort of plants to work with. Right. So because I'm sometimes making incense, like in bulk, I do buy retail because I can't like grow or wildcraft like a sufficient quantity of some of these herbs. And some of the things I use don't really grow where I live. Like there are, like I prefer to use local plants, but there are some things that I like I love the ingredient so much that I'm willing to import it.
Okay. Well, I've got another question that came in from Facebook this morning and it piqued my interest. She wrote, many years ago, I had a dream of being in a temple and got the distinct feeling it was Egyptian, and was taught to make a certain incense.
Okay.
Honey, sandalwood, cinnamon, and cubeb berries. I think that's how you say it, C-U-B-E-B.
Okay.
And she said, oddly enough, the pagan store, when she woke up, had all the ingredients, and she made it, and it smelled wonderful. And so the question is, what are the properties of cubeb?
I'm not super familiar with it. It's a kind of a pepper. So my guess would be, like, I'm not that familiar with it as an incense. My assumption would be that it would be broadly the same as, like, other kinds of basically whole black pepper, which tend to be, like, sort of a little aggressive,
spicy.
Almost. Yeah. They have, like, a martial edge to it. Right. They can bring like a very masculine energy and a really like fiery energy. So and they're good for sort of like cutting between things. But again, that's based on black pepper. I have basically no experience with cubeb, but I will say that like the best way to learn about like the magical properties of a plant is to sort of look in to the like natural properties of it, right? So like I just pulled up the Wikipedia article for Cubeb. And so like as I go through, it's telling me that it's actually not, even though it's like related to black pepper, it actually like taste-wise is, it says a cross between allspice and black pepper. And so allspice, that leans a little more into like a lavish sort of lush, like, you know, those Spice Island kind of spices, right? Broadly, they have this complex history of like trade along the Silk Road and then like really complex colonial exploitation. Like the plant themselves has like a complex history, right? And a lot of cultural associations, and all of those play into its magical qualities, right? So my guess would be, right, that it, in that incense, is probably bringing, if it were essentially allspice, right, or like spice bush, which is a local plant that I use that is similar to allspice, it's probably there to add sort of like a crossroadsy vibe, right? So it's gonna sort of give you like a mercurial edge about the interconnection between ideas and people. And it's going to have this sense of like a luxury trade good. Like it's a really rich, luxurious thing. And then combined with the other ingredients that she mentioned, like as I imagine what it smells like, I would think that is probably like a celestial offering incense, right? With maybe like a little bit of an ancestor necromancy vibe to it, right? But a really sort of high, I don't really like the phrase high vibration, but I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
what I would imagine that that incense would be like if I, what I am imagining it smells like. But again, I have never interacted with cubeb berry. Like I had to look it up on Wikipedia to even know what it was. So that's my guess about that incense, is I would anticipate it being good for like encouraging spirit communication and as an offering to sort of like celestial messengery type spirits.
Okay.
But you know, it's hard to know. And it probably has like a lot of the magical virtues of a plant or of anything else, right? They come from different places. So some of them are like chemical properties, like the way it influences human neurology, right? Like sensor drugs, they do things to your brain, right? And then there's sort of like an emotional component, which is mostly culturally determined, right? So like the way that people interact with a smell is related to like the contexts in which they interact with it. And then like the plant itself has sort of properties that are kind of about the role that it plays as an ecosystem, right? So like a plant has a personality about like how it interacts with other, like that plant person interacts with other plant people and animal people in certain ways. That is essentially its personality. And so if you look at sort of like it's like its growing conditions and the way it sort of functions in its ecosystem as a plant, like how it grows, that can tell you things about its magical properties as well. So I guess I'm sorry I can't talk to that particular plant,
which that's okay.
I don't have any experience of, but that's sort of, I think, the best way to like determine the magical virtues of a plant is to just think, like, just learn about the plant.
Okay. Now, I like the way you say right off the bat that this is a book for both novices and experienced practitioners, and that it's presented in a paradigm agnostic kind of way, which is, the meaning is that it's a guide for everyone. Isn't that right?
I mean, look, everybody's got their own biases, but like my goal in this book was to try and like kind of show people what I thought of as like a big sampling of all the different ways I use incense in my magic. And to teach them what I think of as like fundamental skills about incense making, right? So things about like, if you don't know a plant, how do you get to know a plant? And like, how do you construct an incense for a particular purpose, right? Like, what are you looking for when you construct out a recipe? And those kind of skills, I think, are like pretty paradigm agnostic. Do you know what I mean? Like when I move mm-hmm. from different, you know, when I was coming up in magic, like we didn't have an internet, like you couldn't, my ability to like specialize in any particular kind of magic, like I did not have access to enough magic to do that. So any mm-hmm. piece of magic I could find, like mm-hmm. I just wrung it dry for like everything I could learn. Because you would really only find like maybe one good book a year, and you'd just have to like shake it until everything you could get out of it fell out of it. Mm-hmm. So, and I did that for like 20 years before I sort of, I don't know, before like I found my way into a bigger community of magicians. Like I didn't really have a teacher mm-hmm. for the first 20 years of practicing magic. Like I had co-magicians and we would experiment and figure out shit together,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't really have a teacher. So we were just kind of making it up. So I do like a lot of different things. But I feel like they all fit together. Like I have a coherent, like I have a way I think about the way things work. So to me, it all kind of hangs together, but I'm not particularly something like incense. I felt like it really lent itself to sort of a sampler approach. And those are my favorite mm-hmm. books, mm-hmm. right? Like I want to see like a lot of different things so that I find like the two things out of those 50 that like really caught my imagination and like lit up mm-hmm. my inspiration. And then I can go from there.
Okay. Well, there are a couple of things in your book that caught my eye.
Oh, good.
And so let everybody know the book is broken down into three parts. There's mm-hmm. fundamentals, ingredients, and recipes. And you have some very interesting backstories in the book. For example, mm-hmm. when reading the chapter on the science of scent, okay. I was surprised to learn that scent is developed in the womb. And all I could think of when I read that was, you know, what's there to smell in there but amniotic fluid? And what that probably doesn't smell. But you say, well, tell everybody why. Elaborate on what I just started, because it really makes good sense now.
Yeah,
but
so, you know, scent is in some ways like our most intimate smell. Like when we smell, like pieces of our environment are going like up inside our brain and directly mm-hmm. interacting with it. Like it's a very immediate sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so for the fetus, like all of their senses are mediated through their mother's senses, right? But like mm-hmm. the mechanisms in the brain for processing smell are start to develop very early.
Mm-hmm.
Because smell at its most basic, you know, smell and taste are very close, right? So, mm-hmm. and I'm not a scientist. So like if somebody's like a biologist, please like come in the chat when it'll be like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like that's totally possible. But you know, they're like sort of directly sensing like chemicals that are in our immediate environment. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the immediate environment of the fetus is different than like the sort of air-based environment in which adults live, but mm-hmm. there's still a, like an interaction with the same kinds of chemicals.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
again, I'm not a biologist, so if that was wrong, I'm sorry.
No, well, I mean, you know, when and I'm reading it, it goes, well, you know, the amniotic fluid kind of filters the things that because whatever a baby, a mother smells, the baby smells. So that goes mm-hmm. through the amniotic fluid, and it just really kind of surprised me. And then you were talking about a brief history of incense in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also amazed for some reason to read that by the 17th century, many incense makers were turning away from natural ingredients and turning to synthetics. And that kind of bothered me, you know, because I thought only we develop synthetics all over the place. But I never would have thought that people were into synthetics way back when. And then I started to think a little bit. And I thought, well, maybe it was cheaper to create synthetics and scents, or maybe people couldn't get certain scents because they were halfway around the world and, you know, hard to get them.
Yeah. So, I think it's that. And also, you know, I think we can be really snobbish about synthetic scents, but synthetic scents like allow you to isolate single smells in mm-hmm. a way that you can't do with whole plants, which is, you know, in some ways a bad thing. It's why like, you know, banana candy doesn't taste like bananas. It tastes like that one banana taste.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, and we like, you know, we're so accustomed to like cheap synthetic garbage, basically, that like we write it off, right? But it was like a wonder of modern science that they could synthesize these smells. They could synthesize like these new smells that they had never smelled before. Right? And so I understand why that would be like an intoxicating new art form to experiment with.
Yeah, I was like, bother. You know, I don't know, it just got me. Okay, let me get a couple of chat room questions in before we have to take a break because this half hour is flying. Tim said that he uses ground dandelion root for spirit communication. Would you recommend adding something to it to increase its effectiveness?
I would experiment with it. And I mean, yes, but if you're getting really good results with it, right, then I would experiment with it and see how it goes. So my go-tos for spirit communication are usually artemisia. So I would think about maybe like dandelion root and maybe like mugwort and maybe something a little like sticky, at like myrrh maybe. But it would also depend on like the kind of spirit I wanted to talk to.
Okay, well, with him, that's pretty dangerous.
I guess what I would say is I would experiment. So I'm always, my answer to any question, like, should I experiment, is always going to be like, fuck around and find out, and it'll be fun.
And to follow up that question, he wanted to know, I just lost it here. Jeez, the chat room is moving fast. But I will not say it verbatim because I just can't find it. Oh, yeah, I did. When creating a blend, have you ever allowed your intuition to guide you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, always.
That's what I was going to think.
Which, I mean, every once in a while, it has led me into something that turned out to be gross. But not usually. Like, I have pretty good, you know, a lot of that kind of thing. It's just like cooking, right? I think a lot of it is like, once you sort of have a familiarity with the ingredients, you can sort of imagine what they're going to be like when you combine them. And the nice thing about incense is like, you know, if you put a bunch of stuff that smells nice together, it's probably still going to smell nice. Like, it's actually pretty hard to make incense go gross. Like, not impossible. I have definitely burned things and been like, oh, no, no, we don't smell that anymore. But like, for the most part, like, if it smells nice by itself, you can kind of imagine what it will be like with other things.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, I mean, you can, there's some cheap incenses that, you know, you pick up here and there when you're younger and can't afford anything but the 99-cent ones. And they, some of them, you know, they have the potential to be good, you know, and they're all basically like jasmine and sandalwood, but they are so strong and so pungent.
Yeah, and they just have a little bit of like an almost, to me, they have sometimes like a sort of an antiseptic chemical-y smell that I just, I actually think, having experimented with a lot of kinds, I think the smell I don't like is in the sticks themselves, like the wood punks that they use to make them. I think there's something about the way they cure them that like I object to the smell of. But it would not be the first time in my life that I discovered I can smell things that other people don't smell.
So. Well, that's always good. No, and I've heard that before. Somebody was talking about it on the show years ago and said the same thing. You know, it's how you make it, what you put it, you know, if you're doing a stick and the punks thing. And it makes a lot of sense because some people, when they decide they can do things, they don't necessarily do things. How do I say this? Well, they're not being extravagant in how they do it. They'll get anything cheap to make it up, kind
which
of thing.
I get, like, I, you know, I was, as I mentioned, like, I got into this quite young, so I've done a lot of dollar store magic. But at the end of the day, like, there's nothing cheaper than the weeds that grow in a roadside ditch, and that's actually, like, very solid incense material. So, like, it's actually cheaper than the dollar. Like, the dollar store down the street from my house legitimately has mugwort growing behind its dumpster.
Oh, nice.
Like, at least where I live, mugwort grows literally everywhere.
Wow.
So, like, whole plants are actually usually cheaper because you can just take them. Like, they grow on trees, you know, like, they're just there. And the nice thing about incense is, like, I mean, unless you're like manufacturing it commercially, the amount you need of it is really small. So, like, you can just pick it and you're not going to, like, over-harvest because you only need, like, a quite small amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. One more quick question before we go, and I just scrolled away from it. That's me today. It was about, I'll just paraphrase it. If you don't have the right ingredient, and especially in herbs, there are herbs that are similar to each other. Would another herb that was similar to the one that you don't have work as well or at all?
Yes. Most of the book is really, like, the goal of the book is really to teach you to make those kind of substitutions, right? So will it work as well? I mean, it might work better, right? Like, it's hard to say. I guess I can't make, like, a blanket statement that you can substitute anything for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they all have their own individual properties. But, like, yeah, in general, like, for example, like, Artemisia, you can usually substitute one for the other. Honestly, most resins are, like, broadly interchangeable. But it also depends on the exact kind of magic you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're placating the Hawthorn Queen, like, mm-hmm. it probably does have to have hawthorn in it. Like, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, you're working with sort of the spirit of that very particular plant. You can't necessarily, like, it's definitely going to change it to a different mm-hmm. plant. Like, you're doing a different operation there. But most of the time, you know, I think the most important thing is that to understand why each ingredient is in that formula. Because once you can do that, you can substitute, like, even really wildly. Like, once mm-hmm. you understand why somebody decided to put those particular ingredients in a recipe,
mm-hmm.
then it's easy to see, like, well, if I don't have this, I need something else that will do this particular thing. And maybe I don't have something else for that, but I could, like, get it out of this combination of other things. Or mm-hmm. maybe, like, it turns out, like, I can't substitute for that thing, so I'm going to maybe change the actual magic a little tiny bit to accommodate the fact that now I'm doing, like, this other material instead.
Mm-hmm.
But broadly, like, my goal, my biggest goal in the book is to basically teach people how to substitute. And the way you do that is by, like, understanding why things, like, why recipes use the things they do. So in every recipe, I explain, like, why it has those particular ingredients in it.
Yeah, it's a really great compendium with a lot of information. And I think I sniff a break coming up. So everybody sit tight and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Rhett, where are you going?
I'm going back to the paranormal view, back where I belong.
Please, take me with you.
No, I'm through with everything here. I want to see if there's something left in life I haven't explored. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Rhett, don't run to them. They talk about ghosts and hauntings, UFOs and all kind of supernatural scary stuff.
You'll never understand, will you, Scarlet?
No!
Well, that's your misfortune.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, line.
Oh, you gotta be kidding.
That's The Paranormal View with your host, Henry Foister, Jeffrey Gould, and Barbara Duncan. Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And my guest tonight is Sarah Mastos, and we're delving into the big book of magical incense. Now, incense comes in many forms, Sarah, and there's loose, there's cone, there's sticks, there's cigars. I mean, and one isn't particularly better than the other. Is it kind of like depending on the usage or maybe the way, you know, you're more comfortable with certain ones?
Yeah, I mean, I think they all have like good points and bad points. I will say I really don't like sticks. I think they're messy and wasteful. And, like, I am just too much of a klutz. Like, me using stick incense, I am just guaranteed to get that ash everywhere. Because I actually don't know how other people don't get ash everywhere when they use stick incense. So, and also, like I was saying, I really like the sort of ritual drama of loose incense. So, for me personally, like, 95% of the time, I'm using loose incense. Mm-hmm. But they're all good. Like, it's not, I think that's just entirely personal preference. Like, I just like, I'm not very fancy, you know what I mean? Like, I kind of like my magic to be like caveman style when possible. So I like the idea of just throwing plants on fire.
Well, yeah, I like that.
There's like immediate and intimate way I can do that. But I mean, all the different kinds have uses. And a lot of times I will like roll cigars or even like cigarettes of incense if I want to like go do a ritual somewhere else, right? Because using I have to like cart it all to the graveyard. Like charcoal is suddenly like a big hassle and also attracts some attention. And also, yeah. I'm maybe going to start a forest fire, right? So I will, like, I just roll incense, like, whole loose incense in rolling papers. Mm-hmm. Like, you would roll a joint, and then I have that, and I can take it with me. It's easy to transport. But those are usually the forms I use it in, but they all have good points and bad points.
Yeah, okay, that's a good idea. A nice handy tip. And, you know, in many spells, people use incense for their properties, and there are several scents that people are familiar with, sandalwood, frankincense, nagchampa, jasmine, blah. But it's easy enough to find the common incenses most everywhere. But when we're using incense for practical, magical purposes, wouldn't it be best to just kind of create your own incense for that particular spell? I mean, wouldn't the spell work better if it comes from you? And
absolutely. Yeah. Like, and that's, so when I give recipes, like my goal is really, you know, I sometimes look at cookbooks before I cook, but I never actually like make things the way the recipe told me to. I just kind of look at a bunch of different recipes for the same thing and I'm like, okay, I got this. And then I make up something that is similar to that, but like tailored to exactly what I want to do. And that's how I feel about magic too. So I feel like recipes are basically, you know, there's a learning curve where you have to kind of like get familiar with all sort of the different ingredients and kinds in order to sort of like build that intuition to make your own. But yeah, in my opinion, recipes are there as like inspiration to make your own. So I make incense for sale. So I do have like pre-made incense in my house already that I use. Mm-hmm. But most of the time for ritual, I do like custom blend something for that exact situation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that, and speaking of making some of your own and also speaking about charcoal, when your book came, the book came with a small incense package of Persephone, Queen of Hell incense. Mm-hmm. And it's got several ingredients, including like Dittany of Crete, jasmine, violet leaves, and mugwort. And its purpose is an offering to Persephone to open the channel and connect with the dead. Can you give us a quick rundown of why you chose those specific ingredients and how they blended together to make that particular incense?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard one. So actually, let me tell a little story. My publisher asked for incense to send out with the book on kind of short notice. And that was actually the incense that I had on hand that I had made like for my own use, right? Mm-hmm. So if I look at this list of ingredients, I think it's frankincense. I don't have it in front of me.
There's 13 ingredients in it, and somebody who was interested in incense and done. Mm-hmm. I can't remember now, but she was when I was saying, well, it's this and this and this and this and this because it really smells good, mm-hmm. and she said one of those things is poisonous, and I don't know which one it was.
Maybe amanita. It does have amanita mushrooms in it.
Oh, that amanita was it. Yeah.
I mean, amanita is a very amanita is the like red toadstool mushrooms with the white spots on them.
That's it.
They're neuroactive and they're definitely poisonous in large quantities. But even if the entire bag full of incense that they sent you, mm-hmm. if you lit it all at once, put like a bag over your head and huffed it, that still would not be enough to poison you. Like, you would maybe get a little high from it.
I mean,
the amanitas are poisonous in large quantities, but mm-hmm. the entire, like, gallon Ziploc bag of incense that I sent to, like, the publisher that went out with the sample copies, like, uh-huh. that whole thing, maybe, like, if you were taking amanita, like, to have a hallucinogen trip, uh-huh. the entire gallon Ziploc bag had maybe like a dose and a half in it. And that got spread over, I'm going to say, 4 dozen people.
At least, yeah.
So it really, I don't think, I mean, I will say I have definitely like leaned directly over the charcoal and huffed it during ritual. Mm-hmm. And like you get, I guess, like a very mild high, but definitely not like less than half a marijuana joint kind of high. Like it's not, it's poisonous in large quantities and you shouldn't eat.
Right.
But
right.
That's one of the nice things about incense is, you know, with like essential oils and other things that are really distilled out to be super strong, you have to be really careful. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying like there is an appropriate level of caution you should use when experimenting with unfamiliar chemicals and plants, but in the quantities you use for incense, and like the way you use incense, like I'm not encouraging people to smoke it out of a pipe, although you could. Like even that would not kill you. Like this particular one, it's got a lot of frankincense in it, so I think it would be really unpleasant in your lungs to smoke it. But like even if you're huffing it during ritual, mm-hmm. even if you're huffing it like in a tiny bathroom where you are hot boxing the incense, I still don't think there's barely enough to like get you high, much less poison you. So amanita mushrooms are technically poisonous, but are widely used in tons of magical applications.
I will pass that on.
I mean, good looking out. Like I wasn't trying to poison you. So good job.
No, I didn't worry me. But when she said it, I mean, I had no clue. But I said, you know, that can't be. You know,
I promise, it would be really bad form on me if I said
for you, for the publisher, for everybody else, you know, and I'm trying to explain that to her. So it's like, okay, yeah. I just had to bring it up. But it really does smell.
Poison yourself with incense.
I haven't tried it yet with the charcoal, but I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's those little sparkles from the charcoal when you get started.
Oh, I think the little hiss sizzle noise as they like spread across. I love everything about incense.
I know. So I was really happy to get that short term. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we were talking, you know, about different uses of incense. And one of the things that people may or may not use it for are offerings. Because, you know, if mm-hmm. we're offering something to in spell work, you know, it may be some honey, or it may be, you know, you don't think that it's incense necessarily, but you have a whole chapter in the book about basic offerings, basic offering incenses. And, you know, since offerings are so important in our practice, let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, incense is a very, very traditional offering in a lot of different religious and magical contexts and cultures. One of the nice things about incense as an offering is that it goes up, mm-hmm. right? So there's like a ritual theater element to like, you can really imagine it like traveling up to the heavens and the gods, right? Mm-hmm. In a way that, like, if you just put a bowl full of honey on a table, it's sort of not as dramatic, mm-hmm. right, as a ritual mm-hmm. offering. But the incense, like it changes state, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you do something to it to create that offering. And it's particularly nice in, like, group contexts because, mm-hmm. you know, when you're doing magic in a group, like a relatively large group, it's kind of hard to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But incense, like, it, you can smell it in the whole space. Mm-hmm. And also, like, you can see that plume from really far away.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, incense provides, like, it's a very ephemeral medium, like a cloud, right? And so just like you can look into the clouds and, like, see images in them, you can mm-hmm. scry in incense smoke as well. So you have mm-hmm. this offering element that sort of also creates kind of like a space in which the spirit can manifest. Mm-hmm. In a carefully constructed incense, like, the way I think of it is you've sort of, like, created a little bubble of, like, natural habitat for that spirit that makes it easier for them to manifest.
I like that. Now, since incense can be very versatile, mm-hmm. you know, in that it can be burned in many ways and it can be used in many ways. I mean, you can burn it, you can put it in a charm bag, you can, you know, stuff it in a doll if you have to for whatever reason,
mm-hmm. yeah,
whatever
exactly.
suits the purpose. But, okay, so there are people, and I've heard this before, that can't use incense, they say, because it gives them headaches or allergies.
Right.
Is there any way around that?
Well, I mean, the first thing is to figure out what they're actually allergic to. So, like, for example, I'm allergic to lavender, which mm-hmm. took me a while to figure out because there's lavender in a lot of things. So mm-hmm. for a while, like, I thought I was just allergic to, like, for example, all natural skincare products. But actually, like, over time, I eventually figured out that what I was allergic to was lavender, which happened when I started, like, getting more into plant magic. Because mm-hmm. once you, like, put your hand in a bag full of lavender, and you're like, oh, I'm just covered in hives now. Like, it, you know, once you're dealing with large quantities of lavender, it becomes pretty clear that that's what you're allergic to. So that's the first mm-hmm. thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, like, it depends, I guess what I'm saying is, it sort of depends on the exact case, right? So mm-hmm. if it's the fact that it's smoke, right, like, a lot of people just don't like smoke, you can use it as, like, a potpourri, so you can, like, just mm-hmm. smell it in a bowl.
Yeah.
Right? You can, most incenses you can, like, boil in water to produce, like, a scented steam. Right? And you can also, like, use the plants in different ways, but I would never encourage somebody to, like, use materials they're allergic to. So,
yeah.
I mean, if you're allergic to whatever's in the incense, don't use that.
Well, if you know, and then sooner or later you're going to find out, like you did.
Yeah, exactly. And so, for example, that's why none of the recipes in the book have lavender in them.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to give people recipes that, like, I didn't experiment with because I'm allergic to lavender. So there's no lavender in the book.
I know somebody that's lavender allergic too, so that's good.
And it's in everything. Like,
well,
because it's a really, it's a really cheap essential oil. That's mm-hmm. why lavender scent is in everything.
I keep thinking lavender, I keep thinking of Yardley soap. I just dated myself a whole lot. So I'm going to go on to the next thing. if you want to start learning how to make your own incense, mm-hmm. Somebody in chat room just said, or Tim said, that he'll be growing his own herbal garden this year, mm-hmm. herbal incense garden. So what do you tell people when they say, well, I'd really like to learn how to put these things together and whatever? I mean, would you suggest that they have a lot of different herbs ready and then they can kind of experiment? Or how do you get started if you want to just make your own incense?
I think the thing to do is to start with just, like, a very small sort of, like, pantry of basic ingredients, right?
Which would be...
Yeah, so I usually recommend somebody have a resin. The easiest one to buy is usually frankincense, but they can also, like, wildcraft a resin, depending on, like, what trees are in their area. So, like, pine resin, it makes an excellent incense and is, like, most people have some kind of pine tree around them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I would encourage them to have some kind of artemisia. So I really like mugwort, but like for people who live in the Southwest, that might be like a sage bush.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They probably want some kind of salvia. I like rosemary. They probably want like some kind of flower petals. Rose petals are usually easiest. You know, I think actually if people go to my Amazon author page, there's actually like a video of me giving a work, an hour long work talk on this exact topic. Like, these are the 10 things you should have in your pantry and here's how to put them together.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That but would be good. I encourage people to like use whatever they have on hand. Right. So I will say, the vast majority, in fact, if you look at the recipes in this book, I think you can tell that, like, actually the vast majority of my recipes lean on maybe, like, 24 ingredients that I'm just, like, recombining in different ways, right? And a lot of them, you know, you can think of as kind of categories, right? So, like, cinnamon is a great thing to put in incense, and it's just, you know, super easy to get. So basically, I would encourage people to just get like a small pantry of ingredients that they can grow or wildcraft or just like buy at the grocery store and experiment with them. Mm-hmm. But really, any kind of spices that you use in cooking have a role in incense as well. So like every spice in your cabinet, put it on charcoal and see what it's like.
Oh, that's nice. no, people that don't.
Note, certain kinds of ground, for incense, you want to be careful about putting really finely ground spices, like kitchen ground spices, on charcoal because they can spark. And I really strongly don't put ground black pepper on charcoal.
Ooh.
Like, you're basically making like mace. Like, you can put whole black peppercorns on charcoal, but if you put ground pepper, it just burns too fast, and it creates, like, a giant cloud of, basically, tear gas.
Okay.
So, Thank you for that. Don't perform. I mean, you can, but it will be unpleasant. Don't perform that experiment.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And other kinds of spices, if they're ground really fine, sometimes you want to put just, like, a drop of water in them to get them, like, just a little, because otherwise, you know, if you, like, sprinkle cinnamon directly out of, like, a kitchen shaker onto charcoal, it can kind of, like, ploof up and spark in a way that is messy and inconvenient. And I guess if you're really unlucky, could maybe start a fire. I mean, I don't think it's really dangerous. I think it's mostly just messy and inconvenient. But theoretically, it maybe could be dangerous. So kitchen spices, whole is better. But if you only have ground, just get them, like, a teeny tiny bit wet to just get them, like, a little heavier.
Okay. Now, a lot of people do spell work with one only stick of incense or any kind of incense, but just with one blend, you know, because they tell people Nag Champa and sandalwood are for every use, you know, kind of thing. But could you recommend a blend that could be used for cleansing and clearing locations and not using just one stick of something?
Yeah, probably. Depending on the context, I'd probably do like frankincense, mugwort, rosemary. For like a sort of light, gentle cleansing. And then if there was actually like a problem, like I will say broadly, I think many people over cleanse their space. Like, there's a natural ecosystem to the spirit world that if you're just constantly banishing, like, you're just ruining all the time. So I do think people generally over-cleanse. But if there's an actual problem, like there's a haunting that you need to clean out, then I might throw some, like, maybe slightly stronger things in, maybe a couple black peppercorns. I really like garlic peels for cleaning. But that's, like, you know, that's when there's an actual problem. That's not like prophylactically like, oh, I want this space, I want the vibe to be a little nicer. For that, I would do frankincense, rosemary, mugwort probably. But like for a harder cleaning, I would start to throw in more aggressive ingredients like peppercorns and garlic peels. Cloves, I really like whole cloves for cleansing.
Yeah, cloves are good. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things and so many choices, and maybe if people like just get a blend together that they like, but they normally probably shouldn't put together or they don't fit together because they made that particular incense on their own, it would probably work while it might not work for anybody else, right?
Well, like I said, the virtues of a plant, like some of them are like chemical. Like there are, like, it's not entirely about, like, frankincense does things to human brains that, like, it's going to do whether you intended for it to do or not. Like every scent is a drug. Like there is a chemical action that it is doing. So like, it's not 100% subjective, but it is definitely like a very broad and flexible art form.
Mm-hmm. You know what? We have hardly scratched the surface. I mean, I went so fast. I knew this was going to happen. I must be psychic or psychotic or one of the two. but, you know, there's so much information in the book. So where can the book be found?
You can buy it anywhere you buy books. You can buy it from me at masterofzealot.com/books. But in my... From my point of view, the best thing you can do to buy it is like call your local witch store
Yay.
And ask them to get it for you. Because I think, you know, I think especially for new people, they like don't always appreciate like what a backbone of our community those stores are.
Yes.
And there's really, there's no better way to like get to know your local community than just like hang out with the person who runs the store because they know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, that's the best way to buy it, in my opinion. But you could also buy it from a variety of online retailers. I mean, personally, I'm going to tell you not to buy it at Amazon because they're, like, literally ruining the entire world. But if you're going to, that's fine, too. Like, I'll sell it to you. I'm sure I still make, whatever, 17 cents if you buy a book from them.
I thought it was a nickel. Jeez.
I know. Maybe. It's probably not. You're probably right.
Well, I'm just going by my own personal thing.
You're right.
When I heard that, I was saying, oh, I better write another book now because it's gone up to that, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And aside from your Amazon book page, where can people find you if they want more information about all your stuff?
You can find me on Facebook. I'm going to warn people, like 2 years ago, somebody hacked my Facebook account and Facebook won't give it back. So there's two Sarah Masters accounts. One of them, like if you look clearly, nothing's been posted on it in years. So not that one. There's another one. That one's me. That's a good way to get a hold of me. Technically, I guess I have a Twitter, but it's pretty new and not very interesting. It's mostly just book excerpts on Twitter. And then witchlessons.com will direct you to my website. And that's the easiest way to look at like books and courses. And if you want to buy things from me or book a consult or anything like that.
Good. We just need to let everybody know where you can be found. That's very important.
I'm just going to plug for 1 second. I have
my
introductory course just started last week.
Oh yeah.
So people still want to get in on that, witchlessons.com, our introductory lessons.
Very good. Yeah. Lessons and people, and you know, it's like people love to learn, and the more they know where to go to find some good learning or good teaching, that's really important.
And the first lesson in every course is free, so people can kind of like get a feel for what's in each course before they sign up for them.
That sounds good. Well, I hope one of these days you'll come back and we can talk about more, and maybe the hour will slow down a little bit.
Well, maybe. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, my pleasure. And let's thank everybody for listening in tonight and also those who are going to be listening in on the podcasts, right?
Thank you. And thank you for such excellent questions. Like, all the questions were brilliant.
I have a really good following in the chat room. I'm so proud of them.
You should
they,
be.
They make me look good, actually. all right. So until next time, everybody. Blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.